DayJet scales back operations. The U.S. Senate punts on FAA reauthorization. And Sturgill admits there were more than 100 missed airline inspections. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, May 7th, 2008. Citing difficult times within U.S. investment markets and resulting issues with securing new investment capital, DayJet announced on Tuesday the Florida-based air taxi service plans to drastically scale back operations. DayJet CEO Ed Iacobucci told ANN, quote, "Effective this week, we have made the difficult decision to scale back DayJet's 2008 growth plan. The company has reduced its employee base across most areas of its business. These changes were caused by external economic factors and are not a reflection of a weakness in the underlying DayJet business model," unquote. Iacobucci added that the business model and its unique computer technology have been proven in the first phase of the operation, but the company needs access to capital in order to reach profitability, which he says requires 30 to 50 line aircraft and 20 to 30 fully developed dayports. Quote, "And when the capital markets recover, then we would expect to resume the growth forecast in our original plan," unquote. DayJet operates a fleet of 28 Eclipse 500 very light jets and has 1,400 more ordered or optioned. Eclipse CEO Vern Rayburn says he's not overly concerned about DayJet's future, calling it, quote, "the last company I'm losing any sleep over," unquote. This is no big surprise, but still disappointing. Partisanship and pork have derailed the U.S. Senate's FAA reauthorization bill. Despite the efforts of Majority Leader Harry Reid to get this done, it appears the issue may be dead for the calendar year. CNN reports senators voted 49 to 42 to limit debate on adding more amendments to the bill. 60 votes were needed to freeze the bill in its current form and get it to a floor vote. Republicans voted almost unanimously against that, contending that amendments already added by Democrats to expand rail travel in New York and increase money in the Highway Trust Fund don't belong tacked onto a bill to modernize air traffic control. Senate aides predict a vote to extend the old FAA funding formula again when the current extension expires June 30th. Some are even saying an extension through the end of fiscal 2009 in September is possible. This all means the issue of user fees on general aviation will most likely wait for the next presidential administration. Back in April, when FAA Acting Administrator Robert Sturgill was facing Congress to answer for the missed FAA inspections at Southwest Airlines, he was asked by Senator Patty Murray of Washington State if there were any other airlines overdue for inspections. Sturgill answered at the time that he wasn't aware of any, but promised to look into it. Well, a few days later, he responded in a letter. The Wall Street Journal reports it reviewed that letter and says Sturgill admitted the FAA has failed to perform more than 100 recommended safety reviews at major airlines, some of which were due as long as 9 years ago. The thorough 5-year reviews of the airline's own safety systems were made mandatory in 2007. The goal of the reviews, which the journal says cover dozens of aspects ranging from flight crew training to de-icing programs, is to ensure that airlines have the right systems in place to identify potential hazards and deal with them appropriately if they find them. While the missed reviews don't necessarily mean safety problems exist, Senator Murray observed that the Southwest case demonstrates the inspections do matter. Quote, "They are one of the best indicators of whether an airline has its act together when it comes to maintenance and safety compliance. Clearly, the FAA needs to bring more focus and leadership to meeting its own self-imposed deadlines," unquote. The FAA has been working to reduce costs through the agency's Air Transportation Oversight System, or ATOS, which relies more on airline-provided data to monitor safety and maintenance procedures and less on physical inspections. The 5-year reviews are one measure to ensure accountability in the data that the industry reports voluntarily. The Professional Aviation Safety Specialists, that's the union that represents most FAA inspectors, has been fighting the move to fewer inspectors and more reliance on industry self-reporting. Union President Tom Brantley says ATOS is being misapplied. Quote, "Rather than use ATOS as a tool to enhance its inspectors' ability to perform industry oversight, the FAA has instead allowed ATOS to be used as a way to shift the burden of oversight from the agency to the industry itself," unquote. In his letter to Senator Murray disclosing the missed inspections, Sturgill said inadequate resources may have played a role. Boeing and the government of Iraq announced on Monday an order for 30 Boeing 737-800s, the first step in reestablishing the war-torn country's scheduled commercial aviation operations. Iraq also took options on 10 additional 737s. The order is valued at $2.2 billion at list prices and was previously included on Boeing's orders and deliveries website, but attributed to an unidentified customer. Boeing reports it's also finalizing an agreement with Iraq for 10 787 Dreamliners, which will allow an Iraqi national airline to provide longer-range commercial service. The 787s will be added to Boeing's order book when that contract is completed. In related news, Bombardier Aerospace participated in a signing ceremony in Baghdad on Sunday to formally recognize two recent orders placed by the government of Iraq. The firm orders were announced in March for a total of 10 CRJ-900 next-gen aircraft, with options for 10 more. Up next on ANN, two new Cessnas make their first flights. The Allied Pilots Association wants its members to get more sleep, and an Albuquerque balloon tragedy deepens. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for May 7th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Cessna Aircraft Field near McConnell Air Force Base in Kansas has been a busy place in the past week. On Monday, the CJ-4 business jet made its first flight, with Cessna Senior Engineering Test Pilot Dan Morris at the controls and Flight Test Manager Dave Bonifield as co-pilot. Morris called the 2-hour, 22-minute flight outstanding. Quote, "We tested quite a number of the systems on the aircraft, including the autopilot, and all performed very well. The FADEX operated just as we expected, and along with the four displays of the ProLine 21, this is a very pilot-friendly aircraft. Operators will transition easily into the CJ-4," unquote. The first production spec CJ-4s to be used in the company's test program will fly later this year. A few days before the CJ-4's first flight, the first production spec Cessna 162 Skycatcher light sport aircraft made its first flight, also from Cessna Field. Cessna engineering test pilot Dale Bleakney conducted flight maneuvers to evaluate control and stability during a 30-minute flight. It's been only 8 weeks since the 162 prototype made its first flight. With two Skycatchers now in testing, Cessna says static and fatigue tests on a separate airframe will begin this month. The Allied Pilots Association, which represents American Airlines pilots, is pointing to National Transportation Safety Board findings in asking the FAA to, quote, interpret and update its regulations on realistic scheduling. The union tells the Dallas Morning News that the pilot fatigue noted in NTSB reports stems from inadequate time between flights to get to hotels in time for a good night's sleep, workdays extended by weather and mechanical delays, and inadequate reserve officers to step in when international flights take longer than expected. The union is asking the FAA to interpret existing regulations on scheduling and to create, quote, new realistic scheduling and crew augmentation regulations to combat fatigue and maintain safety-based flight operations, unquote. APA President Lloyd Hill tells the paper that the existing regulations have been a source of confusion for 50 years, and FAA clarification is needed, quote, to reflect our greater understanding of the link between duty time and pilot fatigue, unquote. The union appears to acknowledge that negotiating more pilot rest directly in its contract with American could raise costs which might put that airline at a competitive disadvantage. Asking the FAA to address the issue through regulation instead would cause any changes to apply equally to all airlines. Tom Reyes lived out every balloon pilot's nightmare at last year's Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta in New Mexico. His balloon became entangled in power lines October 8th. He and four passengers fell to the ground during his attempt to free the craft. 60-year-old Rosemary Woolley Phillips died. The other three passengers filed suit against Reyes, two companies for which he works, and against the festival. The National Transportation Safety Board's causal report listed 11 factors in the crash. Board members ruled Reyes was distracted by another balloon hitting a house, and he was flying too low. They said the ground crew pulling on a drop line at the same time Reyes fired his burner caused a propane tank to rip a hole in the basket. They said that in such an event, the pilot's reaction will determine the outcome. Balloon pilot and trainer Beth Wright Smith told KRQE TV News she'd known Reyes 20 years. Quote, "He's been flying a long, long time. He flew hundreds and hundreds of people. I can imagine how it would ruin your life and how bad you feel for the people who were involved, the families. It would be just awful," unquote. Well, KRQE reports Reyes withdrew from family and friends after the accident. The NTSB says he stopped responding to an investigator's questions in January. In March, he died. The lawsuit, however, lives on. KRQE reports one of the defendants is in the process of settling. U.S. Air Force officials at Shepherd Air Force Base in Wichita Falls, Texas, have identified the pilots who were killed when their T-38C Talon crashed during a training mission last week. 35-year-old Major Brad Funk, a 90th Flying Training Squadron instructor pilot, and 23-year-old 2nd Lieutenant Alec Littler, a student pilot in the 80th Flying Training Wing's Euro-NATO Joint Jet Pilot Training Program, died when the aircraft crashed on approach during a training mission just before 8 a.m. Eastern Time Thursday morning. As ANN reported, the crash was the second fatal accident involving a Talon in 8 days. Two pilots died on April 23rd when their Air Force T-38C trainer crashed on the grounds of Columbus Air Force Base in Mississippi. While there's no indication the two accidents were related, the Air Force has grounded all T-38s pending investigation. The T-38 Talon was first flown in 1959. It's a twin-engine, high-altitude, supersonic tandem jet trainer. The upgraded T-38C has a pressurized glass cockpit with a no-drop bomb scoring system. Still ahead, AOPA invites you to its annual headquarters fly-in June 7th. The FAA has released this year's Air Venture NOTAM. And the U.S. Air Force is finally updating its Pong-era B-52 simulators. You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits? That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800 for Cessna.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, May 7th, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. The Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association will hold its annual fly-in and open house this year on Saturday, June 7th at the association's headquarters on the Frederick Municipal Airport in Maryland. AOPA President Phil Boyer says headquarters will be open for self-guided tours and the chance to meet the staff. Quote, "We look forward to meeting our members and also telling the general public about our industry," unquote. AOPA will debut its Discover Flying seminar at this event to discuss flight training with non-pilots and answer their questions about how to get started. Pilots are encouraged to bring prospective pilots to see what general aviation is all about. Thousands of people attend the AOPA fly-in each year, and hundreds of aircraft fly in for the day, making Frederick Airport one of the busiest airports in the country. A temporary control tower will be in place to handle that traffic. The AOPA 2008 Get Your Glass Sweepstakes airplane will be showcased at the aircraft exhibit area on the ramp. The 1976 Piper Archer is undergoing refurbishments throughout the year and will be awarded to one lucky pilot early in 2009. The public unveiling of a completely upgraded state-of-the-art glass panel for the Archer will be shown at the fly-in. June 7th is also Airport Appreciation Day at Frederick. Airport staff and flight instructors will be on site to speak about the facilities, meet visitors, and show off the aircraft in their fleet. And then July brings EAA AirVenture. The FAA has released the EAA AirVenture Oshkosh 2008 Notice to Airmen. That NOTAM features arrival and departure procedures, and it's required reading if you're flying into Oshkosh for the event. And print a hard copy. Pilots are expected to have a copy of the NOTAM available for in-flight reference. The PDF version is available at airventure.org. Just click the link labeled Plan for it, then click on Pilot Information. A 32-page printed version of the NOTAM is available through the website or by calling EAA Membership Services toll-free at 800-564-6322. The NOTAM is in effect July 25th through August 3rd and outlines procedures for the many types of aircraft that fly to Oshkosh for the event, as well as aircraft that land at nearby airports, and it also includes radio frequencies, Whitman Regional Airport details, and much more. There are updates in nearly every area this year to enhance safety, efficiency, and convenience. It was designed by the FAA in partnership with EAA to assist pilots in their AirVenture flight planning. The 56th annual event is billed by EAA as the world's greatest aviation celebration. It'll run July 28th through August 3rd at Whitman Regional Airport in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Two B-52 simulators at Louisiana's Barksdale Air Force Base and another one at Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota are due for overhauls to bring them literally into the 21st century. The Air Force has tasked Lieutenant Colonel Tom Sylvia with a job of making sure the sims are realistic. And with 19 years and more than 3,000 hours piloting the B-52 Stratofortress, he's probably the perfect guy for the job. The colonel says the old sims had two analog screens. The new one will have six digital screens and a 180-degree wraparound. Quote, "It is now the same view that we have from the airplane. My first thought when I first sat in the revamped simulator was that this is so much better," unquote. Among the problems training in the old sims, says Tom, was accurately depicting an air refueling mission. Training on the complicated maneuvers can now be done in the simulator. Jeff Bergdorf, the Air Combat Command B-52 program test director, said the old sims were also getting hard to support. Bergdorf has worked on the simulator since 1978. He says old hardware was getting hard to fix and was less flexible to changes. The software was designed with an ancient program language that made hiring new technicians difficult. Of the new sims, he says, quote, "It's like we went from Pong video game systems to the newer gaming consoles of today," unquote. The actual costs to the Air Force of an hour of simulator time total $400. If that sounds a little steep, compare it to $16,000 an hour for time in an actual B-52. And that's the cost if the trainees don't make any big mistakes. And finally, last week, the congressional watchdog newspaper The Hill published its list of the 50 most influential lobbyists for business interests. Two names familiar to Aero News listeners made that list. One is former FAA Administrator Marion Blakey, recognized for her work as chief of the Aerospace Industries Association, which represents the nation's manufacturers of aerospace equipment. Blakey was announced as the next AIA president and CEO in August last year, 3 weeks before her tenure as head of the FAA came to an end. That raised some eyebrows among ethics watchers. The Hill observes, quote, "The former FAA administrator took the helm of the powerful association last year and is already making an impression," unquote. The other name you'll know that made the list is James May, president and CEO of the Air Transport Association. The paper says of May, quote, "The longtime Washington insider is lobbying for airlines that want the costs of running the air traffic control system to be shifted to business jets," unquote. Now, this begs the question, if these two are among the 50 most influential lobbyists, and even they couldn't get general aviation user fees through Congress, how come Phil Boyer and Ed Bolin didn't make that list? I mean, you know, just saying. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Speaking of the costs of the air traffic control system, Bob Poole of the Reason Foundation says the FAA's plan to wait till 2020 for ADS-B will make it more expensive for general aviation pilots. I'll wrap up my conversation with Bob today. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.